Welcome to Come and See, your podcast for finding truth in a world of chaos. Brought to you by Living Waters Abide Ministries. With host and founder, Richard Case, and co-host and retreat leader, Kathy Riccone. Jesus reminds us to watch for the signs of his return. Today, we will explore further what we are seeing in our times that line up with what signs he said would indicate the potential of the end and his return. We will also discuss the practical meaning of this as we watch and as a remnant prepare as he so leads. And now your host, Richard Case.
Well, good morning, everybody. This is End Times Friday, and we are going to be airing this 1st of February, and we're excited again to have our good friends Eric and Rabbi Ephraim, Denny, and Kathy and I, of course, and we're very excited to catch up because lots and lots happening. First of all, Eric, how was your? You were in the U.S. during the holiday, right?
That's correct. I arrived in the Caribbean around December 5th, and then I got back to Israel around January 7th.
Oh, great! How was it?
That sounds nice.
Oh, it was exhausting.
So you're back home and in Israel. And Rabbi, how about you? What did you do during the Hanukkah and the holidays?
I don't think, because it's not really holidays here. So we did Hanukkah, but it's regular work time all the time. So I just worked right through it.
Okay.
Interesting.
Oh, great. Well, it's good to have you. So our first question is, since the last time we were, there's been a hostage deal with Hamas. So, you know, maybe Eric, you could start, kind of bring us up to date. What happened? How is it working? And what's the status of that?
So the deal that got concocted was based upon the deal that was provided by the Netanyahu administration back in May, with some significant changes along the way. And calls for three phases, and then it was promoted subsequently by the Biden administration and was largely rejected by Hamas at the time. And the main, well, there are lots of reasons why Hamas rejected it, but one of the main clauses that they demanded all along their negotiations was whatever deal got constructed, it must include a clause that guarantees the end of the fighting in Gaza. Which I find kind of ironic because there's really no such thing as ending peace here or ending war. It's just how long will quiet last before the next outbreak of fighting. And since Hamas tends to be the one who starts these things, I find it all ironic that they're demanding a more nuclear ceasefire.
That clause was a major concession by Hamas, although they denied it, because that is not currently included in the current deal that got being executed right now. So this deal calls for three phases, and in the first phase, Israel is going to be getting 33 hostages. The army believes that most of this 33 are hostages. First of all, not the native areas of Gaza. They haven't done it yet. They're gradually doing it. there's a schedule that's a part of the deal. There's a schedule. And at the end of phase one, as my understanding, we're going to recognize it roughly, depending upon its location, 700 meters, which is about a half a mile. Is that right? About a half a mile to almost a mile. Basically, because it's like a landing. We're in the military there, but they'll certainly be no civilian structures and sort of you went and venture in there if you're a civilian on your own. But highly likely, probably be shot. And according to my understanding, at the end of this phase, there will still also be troops, Israeli troops. That's what's called the Philadelphia border, not Philadelphia, but Philadelphia. That is the about a 3 kilometer deep region bordering the Egyptian border, and there will be troops there. And not only this is to prevent large-scale smuggling of the attempts by Hamas to rearm. And the border between Gaza and Egypt is supposed to open to certain types of people, mostly Gazans who need medical care inside Egypt. And it's not clear to me exactly what's planning that Jordan, or is it the Palestinian Authority, but I think it's been confirmed. And so we really don't know about that. And nor do we know the date in which that happened. And then in return for these 33 hostages, there's something in the vicinity of 1,800 terrorist prisoners that were released from Israeli jails.
Can you expand just a little bit on, because I was really curious about this, these 1,800 prisoners. So they are imprisoned for terrorist activity, is that correct?
No. There are roughly, out of this number, there are roughly 200 that have stood trial and have been convicted of murder.
Okay.
And so I don't have to like 200 in this category, okay?
Okay.
And there were rumors for a while that they were not going to be released to either join the Samaria or Gaza, which is some third party country like Turkey. But it's not clear. You know, there are a lot of terms of this agreement that, one official says one thing, another official says something else. I suspect a lot of it writing, but it's not being disclosed to the public here in Israel in the level of detail one would need in order to be able to answer some of these questions.
Right.
So, Hamas announced that 4 women released this Saturday. Okay? Now, the only women that are left beyond the 3 that were just released, except for one mother, all the rest are really IDF soldiers who were captured in Gaza. Now, they weren't like combat soldiers, but they were people monitoring the border using video cameras and incidents. Now, because they're IDF soldiers, the ratio of the number of people released out of prisons goes up compared to. So, for the 3 hostages were just released, there were 90 people released from Israeli prisons. And most of these people, none of them were convicted of murder. They were Iraq bombers. They interfered with actions that were being done in Judea and Samaria. The crimes were. So, with this first round, there was not a lot of angst inside Israel with the population over the nature of the people getting released. That will change this Saturday. Because on the assumption that I'm right, that will be some of these Israeli IDF soldiers, female IDF soldiers released, then Israel will be releasing something in the vicinity, I believe, of somewhere between 50 to 80 real convicted terrorists. this place. And there's the names that have been released. And this is very, the mood here in Israel is very mixed and it swings back and forth daily, I would say. And within Israel, there's obviously, the vast majority of the population, is willing to do a deal to get the hostages out. But there's a significant part of the population that's very upset with this deal because, in part, because it doesn't end the conflict in the world about Hamas. Hamas is being perceived as being still in charge, as one difficulty. But I think the larger population is just, going through this process of losing really nefarious people with this deal. The last time we did this, we ended up with Yon Gelson leading Gaza. And the fear is that with this round, with the number of terrorists being released, we're just going to expect major problems from down the road. Okay? But that's the deal, and this will live up to it. In addition to the general the population over this issue, which is a huge issue, right now this is the main issue that people are having to deal with. But remember that there are families. I have a good friend, he's a friend named Abdullah Fool, whose mother was murdered by a terrorist. The murderers can be released from prison. I'm not sure this weekend. In one of his weekends, as the change goes on, the murder of his brother, that's all over the country. And it's a smaller country, so everybody knows somebody whose family is dealing with the fact that the murder of their family member is now going to be released prematurely from prison.
What's the numbers? How many hostages are ultimately going to be released back to Israel and how many are going to go back to Hamas? And, we know that there wasn't there originally, like over 200 that were taken, and how many have been coming back, and then what's left? And does that mean the rest of them are dead?
Excuse me a second. I went to this detailed numbers and it was three students. And so I'm gonna go back, pull it up, and saw all the numbers in front of me. In the meantime, maybe try to do you agree or disagree with anything I just talked about?
I agree with everything you said, but I would strengthen what you said about the country, even those who agree that this had to be done, because we're so desperate to get our people back from captivity. Evil captivity in Gaza. So people are so desperate for that, and it's gone on for 470 days or something like that. People are just going mad. So even those who support it and believe that we just have to do this deal are just freaking out. We're just really torn, worried, don't know if it's the right thing, even though we really have to do it. I'll throw in some Judaism here, from the Torah. In the Torah, we've had a long history in the Jewish people of people taking Jews captive throughout the Middle Ages. The local authorities would capture Jews and rabbis, and usually for money. They would bribe the community. If you want your rabbi back, you have to pay us tons of money.
Yeah,
and they drastic. So anyway, we've had much experience over thousands of years with captives, and the Rambam, one of the major codifiers of Jewish law, deals with the question of what do you pay for ransom? Like how, are there any rules and principles? And the overriding principle that he says is that you should never pay more to redeem a hostage than everyone else in the world will pay. Because if you do, then Jews will be a target. Then whoever it is will know that you're a Jew. Their Jews are so caring about life and about their families that their friends do anything for it. So they know that's going to happen. We're just going to put ourselves in deeper water in the future. And there are great rabbis
who told that they were taken captive. They were told by their communities. They told their communities, do not ransom the people. Because if you do, it means a lot more. So Israel is doing exactly not that. And we're aware that this is going to bring more problems. Hamas and other terror organizations in Iran, they know how much they can gain and how much they can squeeze us. For every Jewish life, we're giving up 30 to 50 terrorists. You know, we're getting that baby they, you know, who they disgustingly, sometimes a dead baby, we're going to be getting that, who they disgustingly kidnapped from their homes. And we're giving up 30 to 50 terrorists who are determined to come back and kill more of us. So this is not easy for us to be witnessing. It's affecting our long-term feeling of security. Hamas is going to rebuild. These terrorists have past terrorists that we have believed have experienced this. And I think it's something like 80% of them go back to terrorism. So, you know, you don't have to be a prophet to know that we're asking for trouble. And it's not, that's not easy to live with in a small country where, you know, they're anyway, even today, having almost daily terror attacks. You guys don't care about them probably too much, but it's almost every day that there are terror attacks somewhere in the country. Mm. And we're just asking for more.
Yeah.
What?
Is there a belief among anyone that there is a bigger story playing out that behind the scenes, and it just hasn't played yet, that something big is about to happen that would, you know, maybe resolve the questions you're raising here?
You mean by the hand of God, or you mean by some other getting
either? Well, I was first thinking, you know, some negotiated, we'll get to phase one, and then, you know, all hell's going to break loose as Trump says. So is there some other thing, or even a willingness to sacrifice at some point and say we're going to end this thing? And then I guess the bigger question is, there's some bigger plan that some folks believe this is going to work out fine, and we trust that.
Well, so it may not be publicized in the United States, but we've got a great deal of publicity around. It was January 11th, which is Shabbat, a Saturday. Trump's Middle East negotiator, Steve Minnicott, if I don't pronounce it the name right, was in the area and actually in Israel and demanded to meet with Prime Minister Netanyahu himself. And in most cases, Prime Minister Netanyahu, except for what we call Kikui Nefesh, which is the risk of human life, he would not invite him himself. He was given basically an ultimatum that didn't matter. He was meeting with Steve Minnicott when they met. And in that meeting, there was a lot of arm twisting going on. Basically, Minnicott threatened to get on the plane with Trump. There's no deal. He was president-elect Trump at the time. And Prime Minister Netanyahu felt like basically the world trust behind his back, he had no choice. And he capitulated on several key issues in Israel that resulted in a current time. And no one knows whether it's part of that. People are assuming and hoping as a part of that, they got certain promises from Trump, in the Trump administration, and no one knows for sure. And no one really knows. So, and those kind of assurances, we want something along the line of what to do with Iran, other higher level issues, but no one knows. And we're not going to know probably for a long time. So, That resulted in this deal that has a lot of mixed emotions. You've been here for a while, but I'm an anchor game here in Israel. And it's been a difficult 6 month period to live through for the next 6 weeks. And we'll see whether there's another deal. So, we really don't. I believe, and I'm not sure my opinion is the main opinion in the country. I believe that if Hamas gets too greedy with respect to the number of terrorists we're going to have to release from prison for the next batch of hostages, then I don't see how the government survives going through a second phase of this. If this is at the times or more line like what we're talking about now, like, you know, maybe 15 or 20 terrorists for every Israeli soldier, then probably we'll continue going on with the second phase. But I honestly don't think. I'm not sure anybody believes. I'm not sure anyone in the government believes.
Were you able to pull up the numbers? What's
Yes, I am. So on October 7th, 251 people hostages. Most of them civilian, of course, on civilians. There were four hostages already being held by Hamas since about 2014. Of those four, two are known to be dead and two are known to be alive. So that's a total of 255. As about 6 weeks ago, when I got those numbers off the government website, I hadn't been updated since then. As of basically 5 or 6 weeks ago, beginning of the year, 154 hostages in all, out of the 255, released or rescued from where their bodies found. Okay? That means basically 97 plus the 4, one hostage. Okay? We know that the two for sure don't know, right? And the army believes, the army believes that 37 plus 2, 39 are no longer. Okay? And that would mean, in theory, after this first phase, after 64 or so hostages left for being held by Hamas. That's what's going to constitute the second. Now, men, I don't know how many of those are soldiers. I have soldiers. Hamas doesn't care if they're male and the age of 50, because they know that many Israelis are in reserve duty. They consider them soldiers, and they're going to ask to vary the ratio of terrorists and prisoners to be released for each one of them. Everyone's anxious to hear about what that number is going to be. There are certain individuals convicted and holding multiple life sentences being held in Israeli prisons at the moment. And man, I don't see how the government will survive those names forced to be on the list.
What, as this plays out, what is Israel position and activity to prevent Hamas from reforming and rearming and just going back to now another factor to keep attacking Israel?
I suspect that Ephraim and I disagree on this issue, so I'll go first and let Ephraim chime in here, if that's okay. So I don't believe that, despite what the Prime Minister may have said publicly, it was ever possible to eliminate Hamas under the sentence of fighting force. For sure, you could eliminate them as an entity because they're religious fanatics.
Yeah.
And religious fanaticism like this persists no matter what. Okay? And they're just another form of ISIS or Qaeda or the Taliban. It's all the same vein.
Yeah.
It's all the same philosophy that's been heard. And at any price, non-believers, and we can't get rid of the idea, and I don't think we can even get rid of the entity. I think the goal, realistic goal, was to hit them hard enough that their military capability and organized military capability was damaged beyond repair. Now, what do I mean by that? Okay, that nothing is forever. And that it would take them a very, very long time, a long meaning more than 10 years, to reconstitute themselves as a fighting force along the lines of what they did. The other part of the goal, like three main goals, the other was an hostage. So far, if you talk about the hostages, you talk about the Hamas fighting force, one kind of I went through roughly the calculations by researchers. And one can arrive roughly at a conclusion that when we covered about 85% that the hostages kidnapped by Hamas in a reply today. Okay, after his first phase. Okay. Maybe around 50% still hostage. And you can almost use a similar number for Hamas's fighting force. Okay. Because last chance of war, they're basically no rockets. I mean, there was like maybe a rocket or something, which is close to zero, if you could desert this brotherhood. And so, and when you look at all the estimates that the army was posting about how many were killed, how many were captured, how many were injured, and the ability to be able to fight, you can come to a similar number that roughly 85% of Hamas's fighting forces and its armaments. That's which is time, it's probably like 55% or 60% destroyed, and some of them disabled. You can come up with something similar. Maybe 85% of your fighting capabilities disappear. But as Secretary of State was happy to point out, they're capable of reconstituting themselves. You know, they are range might do that. They're basically, there are 300,000 males under the age of 17 in Gaza. Every year they're home, and Hamas will recruit them. And it'll take years to train them, years to recruit them. So the question is arming them. And how effective can it be to prevent them from getting armed? Okay? And that's the thing I don't know. There's some things that we've talked about in the latest. Who knows whether they'll be effective or not. So the extent that they exist there, and most of their leadership has been killed inside the outset, but leadership, their leadership emerges. And they're just, it's enough. The days where a Western country could drop an atomic bomb and kill more than 100,000 civilians in order to end the war, those days are over. It's not going to happen. Bombing Dresden, basically annihilation of civilian people by the Allies, trying to get Germany to surrender. It's impossible to see how it could be conducted this way, given the media and the internet and all this other stuff that's around here. So, in the absence of that, it's virtually impossible for any country, not just Israel, against adversary, to unconditionally capitulate. It just doesn't happen. So, the question now is what happens next inside Gaza? The problem now is, this is now my opinion, and again, if I chime in just a second, it's my view that in the last month or so in November, Paris would emerge from some place in some area we'd only cleared before, and they would ambush Israeli soldiers, they were planting mines, what they call IEDs all over the place in Gaza. And we had quite a high kind of casualty rate in the United troops the last month of the war, unusually high. And most of them were resulting from another vehicle or they stumbling across a buried explosive. And so if the war were to continue, we resume, it's my assumption that going on for a longer time. Okay. And yes, we would be killing many more terrorists who were going to possess. We would also start losing a high number of troops. And we have to be trained for them. So, are we in the area of the law of diminishing returns where, I don't know, I'm not a military expert, but I have the intelligence that the military has right now. I believe most of the leadership in the military was advocating for the spoil in one form or another. Because it's been portrayed in the press like they could, to try to launch command overheads to rescue them, would likely result in more hostages dead or maimed. And so they were recommending that in order to get the hostages, but no one knows what the next phase of the deal in terms of what we're going to do. That's just not my
Yeah, actually, we're at the end of this session. We'll pick it up at the very beginning of next one. So what I heard you say is that obviously it doesn't really end, and they are going to have a period of re-upping, and it's just a matter of how long will it take them, and then what will be Israel's response to that. But you're going to be dealing with this problem, it sounds like. And then, Fram, we'll start our next session and have you kind of weigh in on that as we look at that, and then look at other issues like Hezbollah and Iran as well. But thank you so much for providing this amazing information to us. Because, again, we're getting very limited perspective here in America of what we hear, what we don't hear, and what we think and what we don't think. And so it's really just a beautiful thing for us to get the truth from you guys. So thank you so much. So we will pick it up. Please, everybody, come back next week for session two, and we're gonna pick this up even further. So thanks, guys.
Thank you for joining us for today's episode of Come and See, your podcast for truth in a world of chaos. Brought to you by Living Waters Abide Ministries. Send us your questions and comments, and tune in tomorrow for more answers to your personal questions about living life in God's truth. Remember, God's will is best and none better. His truth brings peace in this world of chaos.